Good morning. My name is Mike Niehaus. I'm here this morning to talk about what's new in MDT 2012. Before we dig into that, let's talk a little bit about kind of the what's happened since the last time we were all here together talking about MDT. Since a year ago when we had the current version as MDT 2010 Update 1, we've now released two new versions. As far as MDT 2010 Update 1 goes, it is still available for download. There's an archive page where you can still grab that for the time being. It will continue to be supported until April 2013, but we're not planning on making any more updates to that. So we've moved on to MDT 2012 as the latest and greatest for all the functionality that we're adding. In April of this year, we released MDT 2012 primarily to support System Center 2012 and to start preparing for the coming Windows 8 release. Then recently, last month, we released MDT 2012 Update 1, which fully supports Windows 8 RTM and supports the System Center 2012 Configuration Manager SP1 CTP. And now that the beta is out, it supports the beta as well. So that's where we're at right now. So what we're going to talk about in this session then is what's new in MDT 2012 as well as what's new in MDT 2012 Update 1. So as we go through, we'll try to point out which features were added in which version, but we'll just group those together and go over them at once. So we wanted to make sure that we added new functionality for any user of MDT, regardless of whether you're using Config Manager 2007, Config Manager 2012, or just doing light touch deployments. As before, it's a fairly simple upgrade process. You install the latest MSI. In the case of light touch, you then upgrade your deployment shares, generate new boot media, and you're set to go. In the case of Configuration Manager, you would generally repeat the execution of the configure Config Manager integration wizard, then generate new task sequences to pick up the new functionality added in the new MDT release. The major themes we've already talked about a little bit. We know that we want to work as well as possible with Configuration Manager 2012 while still supporting Config Manager 2007. We know that we want to be able to deploy Windows 8 while still also supporting Windows 7, Windows Vista, all the way back to Windows XP. So we're not taking anything away in this release, and these releases, we're just adding new functionality for Config Manager 2012 and Windows 8. As part of that, we need to integrate the latest tools as part of the assessment and deployment kit. So things like new versions of Windows PE, new versions of USMT, new versions of pretty much all the underlying deployment tools, we need to integrate those into MDT. It's all about making deployment easier, so a lot of the functionality is tied to that, but at the same time, yeah, we got feedback with the previous versions that it wasn't very pretty, so we tried to make it prettier at the same time as well. So rather than spending a whole lot of time talking about long lists of features on PowerPoint slide after PowerPoint slide, what I wanted to do today was really walk through more of a demo. So let's look at all the new functionality that's in MDT for all the different scenarios, for light touch, for Config Manager zero touch deployments, as well as with Config Manager UDI. So we'll try to do it from that perspective and then just kind of go back to the PowerPoint to summarize, okay, here's what I just walked through. So for those of you who are already familiar with MDT, hopefully you'll be able to look at this and be able to see the new types of functions that are added in there. If you're not as familiar with MDT, well, just try to get a feel for the behaviors of MDT and the capabilities as we're going through this, because we're really going to be focusing on specifically what's new rather than talking so much about what is MDT, why is MDT, how do you use MDT. This is a what's new session. So first of all, we'll start off inside of Windows PE with a standard new computer deployment. In this particular VM, we can see we've made some changes to the initial welcome wizard to add in a few things. One is we have a new header and background and a nice cloud-based bitmap here for the background. But we've also done some more substantial changes, like integrated in the DART toolkit. So the diagnostic and recovery tools have been, we've added the ability to add those into the boot image. So with a single click, we can launch the DART tool list and then from there launch any of the DART tools themselves. So things like a file explorer to let us browse through and see what files are present on the particular system that we're looking at here. So, I mean, that's useful, but more from a perspective of just kind of poking around and seeing what's on the machine. It wasn't real high priority for us to do this for just the true deployment perspective. How can we use Dart as part of the deployment process itself? With Dart 7, though, they added a new capability. They added a remote control feature that enables us to make a remote control connection from another machine, maybe our deployment server, into Windows PE to look at what's going on in the deployment process. So we wanted to make sure as part of MDT that we integrated that. So let me go ahead and launch the deployment wizard here. And we can see down here that there is a minimized window, which is the Dart agent for the remote connection, for the remote control. Now, normally, if you were going to use Dart to do remote control into Windows PE, you would have to type in the information that's on the screen. You would have to put in the ticket number, the IP address, and the port number from this screen. So the normal flow for Dart would be you have a technician at the computer, they pick up the phone, they call you as the support person back at your desk, and they tell you to make a connection into this machine and tell me what's going on. So you would have to have them read you that information, and then you would type that in and initiate the remote control from that point. What we wanted to do in MDT was try to automate that. So we have a new monitoring feature inside of MDT where that information and a lot more gets passed back to the server so that the server knows what's going on the client at all times. And it gets it to the point where we can just do a single button click to launch that remote control session. So let me go ahead and get a deployment started to show you the changes that we made in the Light Touch Wizard, and then we'll switch over to the server and see what that remote control looks like. So let's choose Windows 8 Enterprise x64 as the OS that we want to deploy, and click Next. We can see that there's a new pane on the left-hand side showing us all the wizard panes that we'll have to walk through as part of this deployment process. And after I chose the task sequence, that list actually changed because we can dynamically adjust that based on the specific questions that need to be asked for each task sequence. So let me type in a computer name. So I'll type in demo 001. I'll leave it in a work group for this particular case. This is a new wizard pane then that we added into the process that has been able to detect that there's an existing operating system on this computer. So remember, I said I was doing a new computer deployment. I booted into Windows PE via Pixie. But we can see that there's an operating system on the disk and will offer to capture the user state from that OS. So if we choose to move the user data and settings, we'll run USMT offline in Windows PE to capture all the data and settings from that OS automatically. So let me go ahead and do that. That's useful in cases where we might just want to give people the instructions for doing a refresh deployment by saying, just reboot your computer and hit F12 to Pixie boot in order to kick off the process this way. And we can actually change the default then to say, move user data and settings when that's been specified. The nice thing about that is when we're running USMT offline, we don't have to worry about in-use files. We don't need to worry about really anything that might have interfered with the user state migration process within the full OS. So it's a nice way to go about it. At the same time, we also modified the task sequence to make sure that we could do that same offline user state migration even when we initiate the refresh from within the current OS. So if you were to run lighttouch.vbs to kick off the deployment wizard to do a refresh, you can specify via task sequence variable that you want the state migration to not happen in the full OS, wait until it boots into Windows PE, and then capture the user state from there. So let me go ahead and click Next on this. You can choose the standard locale, time zone settings. In this case, we had multiple wizard panes before that we've tried to merge together for computer names, domains, locales, keyboards, time. We've added some graphics to it to try to make them a little more attractive. We also added a new wizard pane for installing optional roles and features. So in this case, this won't show up by default unless I modify my task sequence to add an install roles and features step. But once that step is present in the task sequence, the wizard detects it and asks, well, are there any additional roles that you would want to install? So at this point, we get a full list of the roles and features that are present in Windows 8, and we can choose which ones we want to install. Maybe we wanted to install Hyper-V, maybe we wanted to install IIS. It doesn't really matter what the features are, we've just made sure that any optional feature that's available in all of the current OSs that we support would be displayed in this list, and you can check them off and we'll take care of installing those as part of the deployment process. One of the items in this list, the first one for the .NET Framework 3.5, is actually a bit of a challenge on Windows 8. So the Windows 8 image doesn't contain .NET 3.5. The installation files for .NET 3.5 are on the Windows 8 media, but not in the Windows 8 image. So as part of this installation process, we need to tell the Windows, the DISM command line that we use to install these features, to please go to the media and pull the files from there. So we've automated all of that into the MDT script so that you don't need to worry about it. If you wouldn't do that, it would automatically go out to Windows Update, find the .NET 3.5 components, download them, and install them like that. But if your computer doesn't have internet access, it won't be able to do that. So being able to do something like this works around that by making sure that we can tell Windows where to find these source files. We can then install applications. No big changes here. The main thing here is that we can also do this with Windows 8 apps. So for the immersive applications, the non-legacy, the non-desktop applications that have a name that we're not allowed to use anymore, you can set them up just by specifying the command line of how to install those, which is fairly simple. We just specify the name of the appx file that contains the actual application. And we'll take care of enabling side loading, performing the DISM commands to put that application on the machine. So fairly easy to deploy Windows 8 applications that way. We can capture an image. We've also added one option to this screen. The second option here to sysprep this computer was an option that wasn't present in MDT 2010. And it was actually useful to add this for one particular scenario. If we're using MDT to create images for Hyper-V, maybe we're using Virtual Machine Manager, maybe we're just using Hyper-V standalone, but in either of those scenarios, the typical scenario that you would use to build an image is deploy an OS into a virtual machine, then sysprep it, shut it down, and then turn that into a template to use for future virtual machines. But the one option that you couldn't do in MDT 2010 was sysprep and shut down. So by adding this option, we can say, just go ahead and do the sysprep. And then by setting another task sequence variable called finish action, we can say finish action equals shutdown. And as a result, as soon as the image has been built and sysprepped, we would automatically turn the virtual machine off, at which point you could tell VMM to store that virtual machine as a template in the library. So a fairly simple change for us, but useful in that one scenario. We've also added the ability to put in enhanced BitLocker pins, so you don't have to restrict it to just short numbers. You can put in longer strings for that. It's fairly easy to do there. And that's about it as far as the deployment wizard goes. So when I click on begin, it'll kick off the deployment process. So we'll go ahead and do that. And while that's running, let's switch over to the server. And first, let's look at the monitoring piece. So on our deployment chair, on the properties, we've added a new monitoring feature, which to enable, you just need to come in and check the box. When you do that, that'll install a service on the machine, where that service is used to capture the monitoring details that are being reported by these client machines. If we look on the rules tab, we can see that once that's enabled, it adds a new entry here automatically that says this is the URL that the clients are supposed to talk to report status. And when we look at the actual monitoring node, we can see the deployments that are presently running. So in this case, my demo machine is currently running. It's in the offline user state capture step. And from there, we can bring up the properties. And there's a few buttons here that will show up. One would be to initiate a remote desktop connection, so running the remote desktop program, specifying the name of the computer that we want to connect to. That won't work in this case because the machine's still in Windows PE, and we can't do remote desktop connections into Windows PE. The second option that's actually not visible here would be to do a virtual machine connection. If we can determine the name of the virtual machine host, the Hyper-V host, and the virtual machine itself, we can enable that button. In order to do that, we need to gather information from the integration components that are running inside of the operating system. In this case, though, those integration components don't run in Windows PE, so we can't yet tell what the name of the host is and the name of the virtual machine is, so that button will be hidden until it boots into the new OS. But that's okay. We have the third option now for Dart remote control, which is enabled because we were able to collect those three pieces of information that we looked at before. So as soon as I click on the button, it launches the remote connection viewer, and we can see what's going on inside of that virtual machine and interact with it however we want. So fairly easy to do that. While we're there, let me hit the F8 key to bring up a command prompt and show one other thing that we enable as part of this process. If I type in just powershell.exe, since we're using the new Windows PE that's provided as part of the assessment and deployment kit, it adds .NET Framework 4.0, as well as PowerShell 3.0 into our boot images. So we made sure that MDT could install those new components inside of our boot image so that we could do things like git disk, git partition, just to some simple examples of the types of PowerShell commandlets that are included inside of the new version of Windows PE that we could use as part of our deployment process. So in this case, I can see that I have two partitions on this disk. So we'll close that and let that deployment continue. As it does, this progress display would continue to progress, showing us the progress of the deployment. But for right now, let's close that out and let's look at a few other things. So first, into the properties of the deployment share again. If we look on the Windows PE tab, under Features, we can see all the new features that are provided as part of the assessment and deployment kit for the new version of Windows PE. So we already talked about .NET Framework and Windows PowerShell 3.0. We then also get things like DISM commandlets, secure boot commandlets, storage management commandlets, a variety of additional components that can be injected into the boot image just by checking them off. We also have the option here at the end for Dart. So if you read through the MDT documentation, it talks about how to get the necessary Dart files into the right place for MDT to find. Once they're there, we just add a new Windows PE component to the list here, so you check the box and we'll take care of doing the rest to inject Dart into the boot image as well. So we've got that integrated in. Cancel out of there, and let's take a quick look at the task sequences. So what we had looked at before was the Windows 8 Enterprise x64 task sequence. That's the one that we're currently deploying. So if we peek inside of this one, we can see the one customization that I made here was to add a custom task to install roles and features. That was one of the options that are available to add to any task sequence. We've completely reworked that so that we now have a different list of roles and features to show for each operating system. If you've looked at this in MDT 2010, we tried to take all the lists from all the OSs and merge them together into one list, which just was okay when we were only dealing with three or four OSs, but now that we have to deal with everything from Windows XP all the way up through Windows 8, it got to be a bit much. So we've separated that out into the separate lists that you can choose from. We've also added another action here to uninstall roles and features. So maybe your image contains roles and features that are pre-installed and you wanted to remove them. So you can specify what you want to remove just the same way that you would specify what you wanted to include. Choose the OS that you're going to be deploying and then specify the features that you wanted to remove. Fairly easy to do. Now, in the case of Windows 8, when you're removing these features, you can physically remove them from the image, which wasn't possible with Windows 7 and Windows Vista. In the case of Windows 8, just by checking the box down here to say completely remove the component, will delete all the files from the OS. So maybe I don't think my clients will ever need the World Wide Web service on the Windows 8 OS. I could say to remove that component completely from the operating system. If you ever wanted to put that back in the future, maybe you wanted to go into the Windows Features applet and check it to install it again. It's the same basic scenario that we talked about before for .NET 3.5. It will go out to Windows Update. It'll find the components that are necessary. It'll download them and add them back into the OS. So this might be a good way for you to try to shrink your image by removing things you don't think your users would ever install. Some of the other changes that we've made relate to some of the things that we've already talked about. So if we look in the pre-install phase, there's a new step here, a new group here for offline user state capture. So if you set the task sequence variable to indicate that you want to do an offline user state capture, then these steps will run instead of the ones that are present in the state capture phase, which are up here. And we're doing that just by using conditions. So the conditions on the steps in this case say USMT offline migration not equal to true. In that case, we'll run the user state capture in the old OS. But if you change that to specify USMT offline migration equal to true, then we'll run it in Windows PE instead. We've also added a step in here to enable BitLocker offline, which is really nice, and we'll talk some more about that after lunch in the Windows 8 session, but just at a quick summary, if you're deploying Windows 7 or Windows 8 using the new version of Windows PE that's included in the ADK, you can tell BitLocker to encrypt the disk from within Windows PE. So if we're doing a new computer deployment, we would format and partition the disk and then enable BitLocker, telling it to format the used disk space, to encrypt the used disk space. But there really is no used disk space at that point. So that encryption process only takes a couple of seconds to enable BitLocker encryption, and then we apply the OS into that empty disk, where all of the data then gets encrypted on the fly as it's being applied to the disk, with no real performance penalty. Yeah, maybe it adds a couple of percentages to the overall deployment time, but compared to the old approach of deploying the OS and then enabling BitLocker once it's up and running and then waiting for a couple of hours while it encrypts all of the space on the system, this is blazingly fast. More importantly, it also works with Windows 7. So as long as you're using the new version of Windows PE with the ADK, you can enable BitLocker offline with both Windows 7 and with Windows 8 to speed up your deployment process. If we keep scrolling, we've added a step to opt in to the Customer Experience Improvement Program in Windows Error Reporting for Windows. You can enable that if you want to. It's disabled by default. The Windows guys really would like to see that type of information reported so that they know what features, what capabilities are being leveraged inside of Windows and what errors are being generated so that they can improve in the future. It's always an opt-in choice, so you can opt in there if you want to. We've also added a step to apply local GPOs. So as part of the Security Compliance Manager Solution Accelerator, they've defined some security baselines for each OS that we support that says here are the security settings that any OS being deployed in an enterprise should use. So what we've done is we've gone into the Security Compliance Manager tool, exported those GPO baselines as local GPO packages, added them into MDT, and then added this step into the task sequence to automatically take those local GPO baselines and install them into the OS as we're deploying it. That makes sure that we get the security settings up to what's recommended by the various agencies that work with Microsoft to say, here's what a properly secured Windows machine should look like. That doesn't mean that this will not cause any issues in your environment, so you may want to look at the settings in SCM and potentially adjust them for your specific requirements. You could also turn this step off if you didn't want to do that. There's either a task sequence variable apply GPO pack that you can set, or you could just disable or remove the step altogether. The types of problems that people typically run into are in a couple of different areas. Usually the number one issue is when you're dealing with non-Windows file servers. This policy requires, or this GPO pack enables policies that require secure communications with file servers. No clear text passwords and signed communication going on between the client and the server. If you're using some older NAS-type devices that aren't based on Windows, that may not work because they may not actually implement the SMB protocols required to get that to function. That's okay. That's typical with these low-cost NAS devices, the couple $100 devices that you go down the street and buy from your local electronics store. Generally, that's not a problem with the enterprise class NAS devices that you may have. But if you start seeing issues like that where it boots into the new OS and as soon as the step runs, it can't connect to the file server anymore, it's probably related to those security settings. Okay, then we have also added some task sequences for a couple of new operating systems that we support. In addition to everything from Windows XP all the way up through Windows 8, we added support for Windows Thin PC and Windows POS Ready 7. So Windows Thin PC is a slimmed down version of Windows 7 that's designed to be used as a thin client OS to a terminal services farm or a VDI implementation. So it basically contains Internet Explorer, the remote desktop client, any other third party remote presentation clients that you may want to run, and nothing else. It's licensed as part of software assurance, so as long as you have software assurance for your users, then you can use this to function as their workstation OS on whatever hardware you may have around to be used as this thin client initiator. So we've added that into MDT so that you can deploy that OS. From our perspective, it deploys just like Windows 7, so for the most part, we don't have to worry too much about what's different from Windows 7 because really there was only one thing. It doesn't support upgrading from previous OSs. Other than that, it deploys just like Windows 7, so very easy to deploy into your environment. POS Ready 7 is a little bit different of a beast. It's designed as a point-of-sale system, operating system, to run cash registers, self-checkout machines, anything that would be used in a retail environment to control that sales experience. So that one's probably not as interesting to most of you, but we wanted to make sure that inside of MDT that we supported all of the volume license operating systems available from Microsoft, which includes these two. These two are available through the volume license purchase program, so we wanted to make sure we added those into MDT as well. We also added a new task sequence to deploy into a VHD. So we've created a modified template that will do a few extra steps. Ignore my calendar pop-ups. These extra steps enable us to first, format and partition the physical disk. So we have the normal format and partition disk step in there for that. After that, we know that we need to create an empty VHD file, then format and partition that VHD file, and then deploy the OS into that empty VHD. So this isn't about anything to do with virtualization. This isn't about copying around VHD files to physical computers. This is about taking an existing WIM image and dynamically creating a VHD out of it so that we can make sure that we do as little network traffic as possible, creating this VHD on the fly and deploying an OS into it, and then setting the machine up so that it boots into that VHD file. So this is useful in situations where maybe I want to run multiple operating systems on the same machine for testing, for evaluation, for whatever the reason. I could deploy Windows 7 onto the physical disk and then deploy Windows 8 into a VHD. I would have two BCD entries on the computer and be able to boot back and forth between them. So it's useful in cases where you don't want to use virtualization for those types of things. Fairly easy to set up. Apart from these extra steps for formatting and partitioning the disk, there really are no changes to the overall deployment process. So it works just like any other task sequence beyond these initial steps. So if I switch over to a different machine here, we can actually see one of those that's completed. This is pretty much the end of the process. This actually gives us an opportunity to show another feature as well. We see the summary wizard. We don't see anything else. It's just a black screen. What's really going on in this case is we've told MDT to hide the shell. So rather than allowing the full Explorer to load and then continue the MDT deployment process with Explorer running in the background, we can use a run once registry key and instead kick off the deployment through that. So the whole process runs from a run once key. So it won't actually load Explorer until I click on finish. Then the rest of the shell can initialize and load. That's actually fairly useful for any deployment scenario, because you can also tell it to disable Task Manager and keep people from interfering with the deployment process. Maybe they want to get sneaky, so they hit Control-Alt-Delete, start Task Manager, start a command prompt, add themselves to the administrator group, or weird things like that. Or in this case, for Windows 8, if you just want the deployment process not to be obscured behind the start screen, well, by saying hide shell, we can make sure that the whole deployment process finishes before the shell even shows up. Another change that we made behind the scenes that you wouldn't actually see is that when you see the summary screen to show that the deployment's finished, all of the cleanup of the existing task sequence has already been done. So in MDT 2010, it didn't actually do the cleanup until you clicked finish. With 2012, it does all the cleanup by getting rid of the temporary files and tools and everything else that we had locally, and then it displays the summary. So that solves some problems where people would never click on the finish screen and potentially reboot the machine and then see remnants of the previous task sequence causing problems for subsequent deployments. By doing that cleanup earlier, we can avoid that type of thing. If we were to actually look at the disk on this computer, we can see that we've done a VHD deployment. Well, not only by the label on the disk, but if we look on the physical disk in this case, we see that there's just one file inside of a VHD folder. So we generated a random VHD file name, and that file is about 100 gig. If we look on the C drive, what we see is just a standard operating system install. So that one file on the D drive maps to this C drive that our OS is currently running from. So initially when the file is created, it's an expanding VHD. So we apply the OS to that expanding VHD and it extends out as required. But once you boot from it for the first time, the boot from VHD process will expand it out to the full size of the disk. So we had specified in the MDT task sequence, by default, allow this file to use 80% of the physical disk size. That's how it ended up getting to 100 gig, because the physical disk on this one is 128 gig. So If you don't want it to take up that much disk space, you may need to go back over to the server side and tweak that configuration to specify something a little smaller. That's specified on the step here to create the VHD. By default, we say that we want it to be 80%. You could specify a fixed size. Maybe you want it to be 32 gig or some other appropriate size for the type of testing that you're going to be doing. As far as the Metro applications, sorry, the Windows 8 applications that we were looking at before, the installation process for those is fairly straightforward. We add them into MDT as a standard application, but for the command line, all we have to specify is the name of the appx file. So by specifying that, the MDT scripts will be able to detect that, oh, this is a Windows 8 application. We'll take care of importing the certificates, enabling sideloading, and running the necessary DISM commands to provision this application on the machine. In this afternoon session, we'll spend a lot more time talking about the Windows 8 applications because there are some major changes in the way apps are delivered on Windows 8, specifically related to these Windows 8 applications. So digging deeper into those is really good. We've also added a few other things as far as task sequences go. So if we look here, I have a task sequence to run a PowerShell script. Nothing special here. What we've basically added is a step to run a PowerShell script. So I've already added that into the task sequence and then specified the name of the script that we want to execute. In this case, that script is in my deployment chair, so I don't need to specify a path to find it. MDT will search the deployment chair until it locates it, and then it'll run it. It'll take care of making sure that the execution policy for PowerShell is set appropriately. It'll capture all the output from the PowerShell script into the bdd.log. It'll expose the task sequence environment for the PowerShell script to use. So various ways to integrate the task sequences and PowerShell together to give you a better experience. So if we look at that actual script, the script itself doesn't do anything special. It's more of a script to exercise the functionality. So we can show that, yeah, if we write output to the host, that ends up in the normal MDT logs. We can interact with the task sequence environment, dumping out all the task sequence environment variables very easily and quickly. So this one line here will actually take all the task sequence variables and write them out to the log file. We can integrate with PowerShell's progress reporting. So if we include any type of write progress commands in our PowerShell script, we can display those inside of the task sequence progress. So let's just look to see what that would look like. Let me switch over to client here. Run lighttouch.vbs. Choose that particular task sequence. And then we'll be able to see what it does. So fairly quickly, it starts counting through the progress display that we had put in the script, counting from 1 to 100. And we can see how that then looks in the actual progress UI in the task sequence. We report then that the deployment is done. On the cleanup side, if we were to actually look at the disk here, we can see that there is still a mini NT SMS OSD OSD logs folder, but what's inside of it is really just the log entries for displaying that summary wizard, and those will even disappear as soon as we click finish on the wizard itself. The real logs from the actual task sequence have already been moved at that point to the Windows temp deployment logs folder. So we can look at that demo log file to see just exactly what happened. Now, these log files are generally formatted so that they can be displayed with the Trace32 utility for Config Manager 2007, which is available as part of the Config Manager toolkit that you can download. Or if you're using Config Manager 2012, they include a new CM Trace utility that works well for that as well. So if we open up that log file, we can see what the script actually did. We can see the "Hello World" line that was written. Nothing really special there. We dumped out various information about the drives that were available inside a PowerShell, and then everything else is a dump of the task sequence variables. So we can see all the different things that MDT gathered, automatically setting task sequence variables related to that. We can see the URL for our monitoring service. We can see that we had set hide shell equals yes so that we would not show the Explorer shell until the deployment's done. We've gathered IP address details. We know that we're running with a hypervisor, so we know that Hyper-V is involved in this case. We added a new property in MDT 2012 called isOnBattery. So if you wanted to make sure you're not deploying to a computer that isn't plugged in because it might run out of battery power before the deployment's done, and that would be bad, you can put a condition in on that particular variable and stop that process. We've added support for UEFI deployments, and we can detect that the computer is running with UEFI. We could probably spend an hour talking about just UEFI, but we don't have time to do that. So as a summary, we'll just say UEFI is a replacement for the legacy BIOS that most computers are running. It will be very key for Windows 8 deployment scenarios when you see these demos of Windows 8 booting very quickly and getting to the point where they're usable within seconds. Well, UEFI is involved in that. So we will want to start learning how to do UEFI deployments as part of our Windows 8 deployment planning. It still does work with Windows 7 as well. If you wanted to do UEFI deployments with Windows 7, you just won't see as many benefits out of UEFI with the current hardware that's shipping today. A lot of the benefits will come with the Windows 8 logo compliant hardware coming later. But if we wanted to do UEFI deployments, we can. I've actually done that on my laptop that I'm running here just to get a feel for what that would look like, how that actually behaves. We know that we're running inside of a virtual machine. Just a variety of other information gathered as part of the normal MDT deployment process. But what we're really looking at here is how we can have a one-line script inside a PowerShell dump out something useful like this for troubleshooting purposes. We could put this step anywhere we wanted in the deployment process and easily get a dump of all the variables from just that one line. This is what I had mentioned before. In this case, because we're running inside of the full operating system, the integration components are active, so we're able to determine the name of my virtual machine host and the virtual machine itself. So if we were to monitor the deployment while it was running on this machine, we would be able to initiate a VM connection into that machine as well. Okay. So PowerShell is in there, and MDT still, for the most part, uses VBScript for most of its activities. It doesn't use PowerShell for anything other than role installation on Windows Server 2012 and Windows 8. So over time, we would expect MDT to shift from VBScript into PowerShell, but that's not something that's going to happen overnight because there's tens of thousands of lines of VBScript code in this that we just don't want to just bulk convert. As we move forward, as we start dropping off things like Windows XP and Windows Server 2003, then we can start looking at seriously making that switch over to PowerShell. So in the meantime, it's really just provided for you to make use of, for you to leverage as part of your customizations to MDT and Config Manager task sequences. In MDT 2012 Update 1, we also added support for System Center Orchestrator. So we can, as part of a task sequence, include a step where we say to execute an orchestrator runbook. So all we had to specify is the name of the orchestrator server and the runbook that we want to specify, which I can choose just by browsing for it. And then we can pass any parameters into that runbook and get any results back. So it's fairly easy to use this as kind of a replacement for web services or store procedures or other external code that you might have hooked into an MDT deployment process in the past. We can get it to the point where all we had to do is choose the particular runbook that we want. We know what parameters it expects. We can either explicitly type those in, Maybe we want it to just pass along hello world, or we can just say automatically provide those values. And if there was a task sequence variable that matched those parameter names, it would automatically pass it to the runbook. That runbook can then execute. We can tell the task sequence to wait for it to finish. If we tell it to wait for it to finish, any return values that the runbook generated get passed back to the task sequence and are set as task sequence variables. So if we run that task sequence, we can see what that looks like. Now, my runbook in this case isn't really useful because all it does is I send a message to the server, it logs it on the server, and then it returns back a parameter to show that it ran successfully. But you can see as part of this that it's fairly easy to do and it's fairly quick to do. So we'll click on begin to kick this process off. It'll initiate the runbook and then continue to monitor Orchestrator until Orchestrator comes back and says, okay, the runbook's complete. As you can tell, that finished really quickly. It only took it about a second to run that runbook, and we can already see the results for that. So if I click on finish, launch Trace 32 again, we can pull up the log file for that execution. We can see that it built a URL to talk to the Orchestrator web service. It created a job, saw that it initially was in a pending state, then switched to a running state, then switched to a completed state. It saw that there was one output parameter reported by the runbook, and it set a task sequence variable with that output parameter to say, I did it. So if we look over on the Orchestrator server to see what that looks like, it really just logged an event on the machine, but just to get a feel for the type of runbook that we're talking about, this one is very simple. It has an initialized step that says this runbook takes two parameters. It then has a step to create an event log entry, taking the first parameter and saying that it's from that computer, and taking the second parameter and adding that onto it. And then the last step is fairly simple in that it just says there is a return value called log result, and the value is hard-coded to just say, I did it. So that's the type of authoring environment that you have for Orchestrator. You just drag and drop the steps into this design surface, you connect them together, you complete the process that you want, and then just tell the task sequence to execute it. So this isn't a very good sample, but you could have runbooks that move computers to different OUs, you could have runbooks that generate trouble tickets in the case of failed deployments, you could have runbooks that send email messages at various points in the process. I mean, it really just becomes a question of what creative things would you like to do as part of your task sequence using Orchestrator to integrate in these other systems, these other processes. So another case of where MDT is just providing something to enable you to do more creative types of things. As far as the hide shell property that we were talking about before, that one's fairly easy to set. We would just add an entry into custom settings where we specify hide shell equals yes. If we wanted to also disable the task manager at the same time, we could put an entry in there that says disable task manager equals yes, and those two work together to make sure that the machine is secure during the deployment process. Very hard to tamper with. Okay, let's switch back over to the other machine for a minute. Make sure I didn't miss anything. So, just to summarize, for light touch installation, MDT added support for Windows 8 and the ADK. It, as part of that Windows 8 support, can install roles and features for both Windows 8 and for Server 2012. It supports the new Windows PE features packs. It supports BitLocker pre-provisioning. We've also integrated the Diagnostic and Recovery Toolkit, DART, version 7 and version 8. Version 7 is the Windows 7 version. DART 8 is the Windows 8 version of that. We've integrated the local GPO packs from the Security Compliance Manager. We've added support for the Windows recovery environment, which is really tied into Dart as well. We've added support for System Center Orchestrator to execute runbooks as part of a task sequence. We added PowerShell support in the task sequence itself. With Update 1, that now supports PowerShell 3.0 as well, so that means we can then also run PowerShell scripts inside of Windows PE. We've added support for deployment into a VHD file to do boot from VHD. We can deploy to UEFI computers, which will be great for Windows 8. We've added support for Windows Thin PC and POS Ready, and we've added offline state capture for new computer and refresh deployments. We've improved the look and feel of the wizards because everyone wants pretty. We've added the new monitoring capabilities that we looked at, and we've done a whole bunch of other things behind the scenes, especially around cleanup to make sure that maybe you're doing a deployment and you decide you don't want it to finish, you hold the power button down and you turn it off in the middle of the deployment process. The next time you try to do a deployment, that previous task sequence could interfere with the new one that you're trying to do. We'll detect that now and we'll present a dialogue that says, we found a dirty environment. Would you like to clean that up or would you like to try to continue the existing deployment? So a lot of behind the scenes work just to make that a whole lot simpler. Now, let's talk more about Configuration Manager. So that was all light touch stuff. What about using it with Config Manager 2012? We can do that as well. If we switch over to my machine again, we can integrate MDT into the Config Manager 2012 console. So we've updated the Config Manager integration wizard to be able to do both Config Manager 2012 and Config Manager 2007 integration. As part of that integration, we just add the necessary files and DLLs, the assemblies necessary to extend the Config Manager console. In this case, it already detects that the extensions are in place, so it's asking me if I wanted to remove them. But all we need to do is to specify to install them, and we've broken this up a little bit so that you can add just the console extensions and also import the task sequence actions too. The task sequence actions, that integration just needs to be done once by a Config Manager administrator. The console extensions are done for each Config Manager console that's being used to edit the MDT integrated task sequences. So I've already done that. In this case, the integration looks like a wizard added in on the task sequences node, another wizard added to the boot images node, and then if we were to look at one of these task sequences, we can see the additional task sequence actions. I always do that. Right click, edit. We can see the additional task sequence actions added by MDT into the process. So just like we were looking at before, there are a few new ones added into this. Same as with Light Touch. We can now run PowerShell scripts as part of a Config Manager task sequence. We can execute Orchestrator runbooks as part of a Config Manager task sequence. We have the additional capabilities around installing roles and features, and we also added the step to uninstall roles and features, which pretty much works the same way in a Config Manager task sequence as it does in a Light Touch task sequence. We also took the opportunity in MDT 2012 Update 1 to take the two task sequence templates that we had before for ZTI deployments and UDI deployments, and we merged them together. So we now have one task sequence that's used to do both. The only difference between the two is one step here that says whether or not to skip the wizard. So if you say skip wizard no, that will do a UDI wizard as part of the deployment. If skip wizard is set to yes, then it will do a ZTI deployment without any wizard at all. At the same time, as we were merging those two templates together, that meant that the ZTI deployments could pick up some of the functionality that previously was only in UDI, like being able to do offline user state migration. We could do that in the UDI task sequences, but we couldn't do that in the ZTI. Now that we've merged the two together, that works just fine. So as you go through the task sequence, you'll see additional steps tied to that. So we have online USMT steps in the state capture phase, if you chose to do it that way. Offline state capture steps in Windows PE, if you chose to do it that way. ZTI will do online migration by default. UDI will do offline migration by default, but the same task sequence variable is used to flip that back and forth. So if we set USMT offline migration equal to true, then we would run the offline steps even in a ZTI deployment. In this case, I'm using Config Manager 2012 SP1. And Config Manager 2012 SP1, the beta that was just released yesterday, adds support for Windows 8 and Windows 8 related technology. So Config Manager shifts over to using the ADK, just like we were looking at with MDT. As part of that, it picks up the new version of Windows PE and the new feature packs that are available for that, including PowerShell and .NET. Picks up the new version of USMT, which is required to support Windows 8 as a target. Fortunately, it still supports Windows 7 and everything back down to Windows XP as a source. It also adds support in Config Manager for UEFI there as well. So we can see in this task sequence, we have some extra steps for formatting and partitioning a disk for UEFI. Now, the standard for formatting and partitioning a disk for UEFI deployments is to create four partitions. One for recovery tools, which is necessary if we're going to be enabling Windows RE or BitLocker. The second one is the actual boot partition. The EFI partition is where the boot files end up. That one's formatted FAT32 because the boot files for a UEFI system have to be on a FAT32 disk. Then there's a small reserved partition that's needed on all UEFI machines. And lastly, everything else becomes part of the operating system. So we have conditional steps in here to format appropriately based on what we found. So if we booted and discovered that we're on a UEFI computer where this underscore SMSTS boot UEFI variable is set to true, then we know that we want to format this for UEFI, which is supported for Windows 7 and above. If UEFI is not detected, then we want to format differently based on the OS that we're deploying. So if we're deploying Windows 7 or Windows 8, we want to create two partitions, a 499 meg NTFS partition, and then the rest of the disk for the operating system. If we're deploying Windows Vista, slightly different. We want a 2 gig boot volume and the rest for the operating system. If we're deploying Windows XP, a little different. We just want a single partition taking up 100% of the disk space. So that 499 megabyte number tends to cause some questions as well. Why the heck are we formatting it to 499 meg? If you looked in MDT 2012, that number was 512 megabytes. If you looked on LightTouch, it was 500. So we had a little bit of a out of syncness between those two. But what we discovered as we were using MDT to deploy Windows 8 inside of Microsoft, when that size was 500 meg or larger, we were unable to use backup software that tried to create a volume snapshot of that boot volume. Because there's a weird rule for volume snapshots that say if the drive is 500 megabytes or larger, you have to have a certain amount of free disk space in order to create a snapshot. Well, if we change the size to 499 megabytes, then we don't need as much free disk space and the snapshot succeeds. So we just changed our defaults from 500 and 512 down to 499 to make sure that that problem never happens for any of the deployments that we're doing. We also have a step now in here for Config Manager 2012 SP1 to do offline BitLocker, pre-staged BitLocker, which is right here, to pre-provision BitLocker. As long as the machine has a TPM, we can enable the encryption within Windows PE and then just turn on the protectors once the new OS is up and running. We've added the step in the Config Manager task sequence template to apply the GPO pack, just like we do on LightTouch. We added the optional step to opt into the Customer Experience Improvement Program and Windows Error Reporting. really the same types of adjustments that we made on the light touch deployments we've also put into the config manager ones. So if we were to use MDT to create a boot image, in this case, because we're on Config Manager 2012 SP1 beta, we will see the same additional options that we looked at before. Contoso. Close enough. So we can see that same list of components that we were looking at before, and we can add .NET and PowerShell into there as well as any of the commandlets that we wanted. One of the new items in MDT 2012 Update 1 is we also added Dart support into the boot image creation. And at the same time, we added monitoring support. So we can use that same monitoring capability from LightTouch as part of a Config Manager task sequence. In this case, I already have a boot image, so I'll end up canceling out of this. But one other thing to look at is we added a checkbox to enable the command prompt support so that you can hit the F8 key to open up a command prompt inside of a Config Manager boot image. We set that by default because that's always useful for troubleshooting purposes. On the task sequence side, if we say we want to create an MDT task sequence, you'll see now we only have the one client task sequence template. There's no user-driven installation task sequence. So we'll choose that one. We can join a workgroup or a domain. No big deal there. We don't want to capture an image. I'll specify an existing boot image in this case. We can create an MDT toolkit files package or use an existing one. I'll use an existing one. We can specify an existing operating system image. Just to demonstrate one thing, let me go ahead and choose a server operating system here, even though we shouldn't deploy a server OS with a client template, just to show that you'll then see an additional wizard pane. In this case, we detected that the image that you chose, the WIM that you chose, had multiple images inside of it. So we'll give you a choice of which one you want to deploy. With MDT 2010, we didn't do that. We always picked the first image, which could complicate matters in some scenarios. So let me go back and change that to Windows 7 x64. And then here's the new choice that we added in to set that one skip wizard variable. Do you want to do a ZTI deployment? Do you want to do a UDI deployment? If you choose ZTI, then we'll set skip wizard equal to yes. If you choose UDI, we'll set skip wizard equal to no. After that point, pretty much it's all the same options as before. The only other things to point out would be that with Config Manager 2012, it automatically creates the client package. And now it automatically creates the USMT package as well. So we don't need to worry about creating these. We can just point those to the ones that Config Manager's already created. And choose an appropriate settings package with an unattend.xml and a custom settings file. No sysprep needed. And at that point, we could create the task sequence. Since we didn't specify to create anything new, that creation's fairly quick, adding that new demo task sequence in. At that point, we could distribute any content referencing that task sequence with a simple wizard that's provided in Config Manager 2012. That's very nice. Or we could deploy it by specifying the collection of computers that we want to target that task sequence to. I've already done that for my existing task sequences, so let's switch over to client machine and kick one of those off. So I booted this particular computer into boot media for Config Manager 2012. And when I click Next, we'll get a list of all the task sequences that are available, hopefully. And then from there, be able to pick one and kick that deployment off. If I had any mandatory deployments for this particular machine, we wouldn't even see this. As soon as it booted up, it would see that, oh, there's a mandatory task sequence. I'll go ahead and execute it. So here I can choose ZTI, Windows 8, Enterprise, X64. It makes sure all the dependencies are available, and then the deployment process starts. As soon as the use toolkit package finishes up, we'll see the same thing on this screen that we saw in Light Touch. We'll see the minimized Dart remote control window, I hope, that will show us that we can make a remote connection into this using the monitoring piece as well. So we'll give it a second for that to finish up, and then see if we can verify that that does indeed happen. Always feels like it takes forever, but we'll give it a few seconds before it shows up in the bottom corner. Same basic idea. We have the agent listening for connections, and we could then go over to the server and try to make a connection into that machine. Gets a little more interesting in this case because I didn't specify a computer name for this machine. So when I look over in Workbench at the monitoring, I had to figure out which of these running computers might it be. And fortunately, I know that it's only been running for about 18 seconds, so it's probably this last one. And we can continue to watch the process from there and again initiate the Dart remote control to be able to interact with that deployment process. Okay, switch back over to the PowerPoint for a minute. Make sure I didn't forget anything here. So we added support for Config Manager 2012, which means integrating into the new console. We can install applications as part of the task sequence. That's one piece that I didn't show. In the Config Manager 2007 task sequence, there was an option to install packages. In the Config Manager 2012 task sequence that MDT creates, there are now two choices. One is to install packages. The other one is to install applications. So we'll make sure that whether you're using the legacy package program setup or if you're using the new application model, we can install either of those as part of the task sequence. We can configure user device affinity. That really is just setting a task sequence variable to indicate the primary user of this machine should be the user ID that I specified, so that's fairly easy to do. You can put that into the MDT database too if you want. We added support for a new pre-execution command, which doesn't really change things too much, but it's a different way of specifying the source files for a boot image so that you can keep the source files separate from the boot image and more easily update them without having to rebuild your boot image. So that can be useful in some scenarios. As part of our Config Manager 2012 SP1 support, we've added support for Windows 8 deployment, BitLocker pre-provisioning, and the deployment to UEFI computers. So those are new with Config Manager SP1. We've also integrated Dart 7 and Dart 8 into the boot image generation process. We've added the Security Compliance Manager to the task sequence. We can put the Windows recovery environment into the boot image. We can run Orchestrator runbooks. We can run PowerShell. And we can do the offline state capture. We've added in the new monitoring capability so that we can monitor zero-touch deployments and UDI deployments just like we do with Light Touch. And most importantly, we didn't drop support for Config Manager 2007. We'll continue to support that as long as Config Manager 2007 is supported. So that takes us to UDI. UDI is the last piece, which is good because we're slowly running out of time here. In the case of UDI, we've done a significant amount of work to the UDI designer and to the wizard itself. So first, let's open up the designer here. To show you what that one looks like. From there, I can open an existing UDI wizard configuration file. And from there, we can see a kind of a graphical representation of the wizard panes that would be displayed as part of the UDI wizard. The key changes in here really are just to make this configuration easier. So like if we wanted to configure the list of domains and OUs, we can specify it in the designer here. just by clicking and saying that we want to add a domain. We want to search the domain for OUs and then potentially add a bulk list of them, or we can manually add an individual OU into the list. Fairly easy to do. We could specify the domain join credentials. We could specify whether it should default to user or domain. So it's all about trying to make the configuration easier with this particular designer. We can also populate a list of packages and programs, or in the case of Config Manager 2012, applications that we want to install. As part of our Windows 8 support, we've also added Windows application packages to the list so we can deploy the Windows 8 apps at the same time. The big change, though, that we made is the ability to create your own wizard panes. So one of the challenges with this wizard has been that it provided a fixed number of wizard panes, and you really couldn't do much beyond that unless you wanted to get deep into C++ development. So now we can say that we want to, from the flow, we can say that we want to add a page. We can say that we want to build your own page. And that will add it to the list here. When we double click on that, we see a designer surface. So now we can just drag and drop what we want that page to have on it. So maybe we want a text box. Let's see if I can line things up reasonably well. Add radio buttons, check boxes, whatever items we want. And then for each one of those, my screen resolution's kind of lacking here, but we can go into the settings for that and specify that whatever value typed into there should, well, first have a default value that we could configure, and then we can put in a task sequence variable name. So maybe we want this to set a task sequence variable named server name. We can do the same thing for radio button. We could do the same thing for a checkbox, whatever variable we want to set from those values. So that's really all it takes to define a new wizard pane. We then just need to add it into the flow somewhere. So let me add it as the first step. And then from there, we can say preview. And we can quickly see what that wizard pane would look like on the client side, because that's basically what we're doing. We're running the deployment wizard from the server so that we can verify that it looks and behaves the way that we expect. So it's not a pretty wizard pane, but it at least shows that it would be easy for you to define a custom wizard to put in whatever additional information you would want into that deployment process. So let's switch over to the server for one final look at the wizard here. This is the pre-configured wizard, so just to show you what that wizard looks like for UDI deployments with Config Manager. We get an initial welcome. We can choose to enable BitLocker, which I'll choose not to for my virtual machine here. We can choose between multiple images. I've only got one. We can choose between multiple volumes, but I've only got one valid choice. If we could have detected the presence of an existing Windows OS, we could then migrate the user state from that. But in this case, we didn't find one, so we have to format and partition the disk. If we wanted to, we could restore user data captured from an old computer, whether that's on a USB drive or on a network share. We could do either of those. In this case, I'm going to skip over that. We run some prereq checks to make sure this machine is ready for deployment, including a check to make sure that it's on power and wired networking and all that good stuff. You can specify the computer name, choose from the domain dropdown, choose from the list of OUs that's available that we pre-configured in the wizard, and then we can specify the join account. Apparently I can't type the password. Oh, O for two. There we go. We can specify the local administrator password. We can choose any accounts that we want to add into the local administrators group. Here's where we can set the primary user using user device affinity on Config Manager 2012. You can choose our language and keyboard and time zones, and then choose any additional applications that we want to install. At that point, we can confirm the settings and kick off the deployment. So the wizard's just been refined and enhanced to provide additional capabilities, including the build your own piece that we had looked at before. So just to wrap up, UDI has the same enhancements as ZTI. Not surprisingly, they're based on the same capabilities, the same task sequence template. But where you get the additional benefits with UDI is the new wizard that we provided, the new improved designer, and the build your own page support. So all of the additional functions like PowerShell and Orchestrator and those types of pieces are available for a UDI task sequence as well. So that makes it easy for us to go through UDI changes because we can just focus on the incremental value that UDI has on top of that. So just to wrap up, MDT 2012 Update 1 is available today. You can go out to the Download Center, download that, try it out. You can use that to deploy Windows 8. You can use it with Config Manager 2007, 2012, or even Config Manager 2012 SP1 Beta. If you have any feedback, you can submit that through connect.microsoft.com. We do have some communities basically available through my IT forum. There's a mailing list there if you have any questions around OSD. It's a good place to ask them. There's also TechNet forums for MDT, and we also have a Facebook page. So if you want to get some updates about changes in the deployment area, become a fan on our Facebook page, and we'll provide some information for you around that as well. As far as related content, I do have a session this afternoon where we'll spend 75 minutes talking about Windows 8 deployment in depth. So if you're interested in that, show up for that one. Otherwise, just make sure that you fill out your evaluations, and thanks for attending.